You're listening to WSCA LP Portsmouth, the Seacoast Clear Alternative. That's right. Jano says so.
Folks, it's time for Local Folk here on Portsmouth Community Radio. I'm your host, Steve Kerrigan, and I'm bringing to you the people that make folk culture happen. And just by listening, you're contributing to what makes Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and New England great. So stay tuned, and we'll find out what makes local folk tick. And before I introduce my guest this evening, I have a few announcements. A word from our other underwriters and the weather, you know. Though I just as soon skip the weather. I mean, I just have to say I was out DJing yesterday and I was looking at my AccuWeather on my phone. And it says partly cloudy. I was on a deck DJing down at the Ashworth playing all kinds of crazy music, not folk. You know, about 5 minutes later, horrible thunderstorms blew down on me and got all my gear wet. I just don't trust it. It says right now it's partly cloudy, 82 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe not. It says mostly clear. Maybe. Program. We have another underwriter as well. Hey, a little bit about what's going on in the community right now. The library welcomes knitters of all ages and levels of experience. The Knitwits, with a K, N-I-T. And I just have to add my own little piece to that right now, and that is that I think one of the Knitwits must have been out on the gondola last night, because apparently there was somebody knitting on the gondola. And I've seen this in folk music and local folk, and I've seen it out. I went to a folk festival called Indian Neck, and they had people just knitting. They weren't on stage knitting, though, and this was sort of on stage knitting. But, you know, I think knitting is just part of local folk. So that's why I guess it's an appropriate thing to announce here. Become part of the Knitwits. Knit at the church. Knit at your gigs. All right, let's get to my guest. Enough of this other stuff. Tonight's guest is a stalwart participant of the Friday night traditional music session at the Press Room. I mean, I've seen him there every time I think I've ever been there. In fact, I think he might have shown up around week two or so, I think he told me. I don't know how many years ago that was. We're going to have to find out. He's been there ever since. And like many musicians, when he heard for the first time his instrument of choice, he fell in love and never looked back. And unlike many musicians, he fell in love with the banjo. He's been part of a bunch of musical projects and has been a big part of the music scene around here. But most notably, to me anyways, he was a member of the Angel Band alongside other previous guests here on Local Folk, including Emery Hutchins and Bob Paul and Rocky Rockwood. His name's Bob Frost. He's right here to share a few stories and maybe some music as well. And Bob, thanks for being here. You know what? Hold on just a moment here. Let's try that again. Bob, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Ha ha. You
thanks
are
for
here.
Asking.
Hey, I'm psyched to have you on. You know, I mean, you've been at the Press Room for so many years. I said you showed up on week two, which is what you told me, right?
Yeah, I called a consultant earlier, and I think that was someplace around 1986.
1986. Okay. But you've been playing banjo a lot longer than that.
Since about 1961.
All right, so I should ask, 1961.
Don't ask me to do the math.
No, I wouldn't do the math anyways. But one question is, though, that was before the folk revival, wasn't it?
It was about the same time. I used to go into Cambridge to listen to the folk scare of the 60s. You know, Bill Keith was a stalwart, as you mentioned, banjo player, and I really just liked what he did. And every once in a while, Bob Dylan or Joan Baez would drop into the Club 47. So the folk music thing was going pretty good about that time.
Question for you. I mean, you grew up, I always ask people this, you grew up with music?
Who said I grew up?
You aged. You your birthday, your age went up.
Yes, it has. Yeah.
Through, but when you were a kid, you know, were you listened to? I mean, you didn't just listen to me. Well, you did listen to some music.
I did indeed. I had my maternal grandmother was a concert pianist. She was New England Conservatory trained, and her piano teaching brought her family through the Depression. My grandfather, her husband, was tool and die maker, and there wasn't any work for him. So okay. She traded music lessons for bread and butter.
Literally, probably.
Literally, yeah.
Huh. I've heard there's hundreds to be made in music, so maybe it was the truth back
then,
too.
Well, if you play long enough, you can get to hundreds.
If you play long enough. Yeah, but to think that you'd be like, I know what I'll do to make a little extra money. I mean, I think I'll become a musician.
Yeah, I'll be a banjo player.
Says, I think I'll be an Irish singer and make some money that way.
Oh. Yeah, you got it. That's how it works.
Yeah, it kind of works like that. Hey, it must have worked somehow if she was doing, you know, lessons of being a concert pianist, but then somehow that rubbed off. I mean, you didn't learn the banjo until later on, but what was the first instrument that you played?
Well, the first instrument I played was a harmonica, which I got at about age 8. After hounding my parents for a Blue Boy harmonica advertised on Big John and Sparky radio show with the guarantee that I would be able to play it in an afternoon. And I did. Well, sort of.
Sort of. So you couldn't, you know, you're like, what was the song?
I think it was the Marines hymn.
The Marines hymn?
Yeah, you didn't have to do anything except move the harmonica. You just blew out. And it's a bugle call, so it's all the notes are from one chord, pretty much.
Oh, okay. So were you? You must have been excited when you.
Oh, I was ripped. That was a wonderful thing, as far as I was concerned.
You like went around. You're like, I know the Marine Corps hymn, and.
Well, one benefit of having learned to play even that at in the same day that I got the instrument was to keep my parents quiet about the whole idea, and so it wasn't long before I was playing other tunes, because it's a hard instrument to play well, but it's not a hard instrument to play.
The harmonica?
Yeah.
What you mean, keep them quiet in what sense?
Well, you'll never learn to do that.
Oh, really? So you were showing them.
I showed them really good.
So, but they played some music too, though.
No, not really. My father, who, you know, grew up in the 30s, he knew all the words to the popular songs of the 30s. And whenever we went on a road trip, which was several times a year, like from Newton, Massachusetts to Norway, Maine, before the Maine Turnpike, it was an endless drive, he would sing all the songs he knew that he could fit in the several hours that it took to make the trip, but he knew more. My mom played a little piano, but never followed it. She became a writer. That was her avocation and her profession.
But he was a fan, though.
He was definitely a fan. He was the principal of Bigelow Junior High School for 32 years or so in Newton, Massachusetts. And by this time of the story that I'm telling, I'd been playing the banjo for quite a while with a couple of friends, and we decided that we were going to get him a washtub bass.
Really? A washtub bass?
Yeah.
Cool.
So we went down to Corcoran's Hardware Store in West Newton and tested the washtubs that they had for sound.
You had to get the right tone?
Oh, they thought we were nuts. And bought the best sounding washtub and painted up as Bigelow Bob's Big Boomin' Vase. And he just had so much fun with that. And so did we. It was a good time.
It's a really good time, you know. It reminds me, though. I mean, your dad singing the song. One of the things that always amazed me about my dad was that we had the radio in the car, and he'd be playing the radio, and he would always know all the words. He'd sing the words before the chorus came up. And we'd always be, how do you know that song? You know every song, you know, and with your dad being the whole radio and everything, right?
Yeah. And spent a lot of time at the radio. I'm sure he did. Because there was no television, and the culture of the time involved a lot of music, and still does. I mean, you can find kids today on the street that know all the lyrics to all the popular songs. It's like they come by it by osmosis, or
oh, they definitely pick it up.
Yeah,
yeah. I remember I was playing this song called Rock Star, I think it was, the other day, and some kid. I mean, it's like a rock country type song.
Yep.
It's not a folk song really at all, and this kid was singing all the words, and they were dirty, though. And I was
Oh,
geez, that's too bad that you know that. But, hey, you know, I don't know.
I'm just trying to stop from being embarrassed, because a lot of the songs, when I first started playing around here in the early 70s with Tom Hall, whom I understand we're all encouraging to become a guest on this show at some point, I heard Tom, who is a student and a scholar of music from the British Islands, and an historian of very broad accomplishment. And I was listening to him play, and I said, I know those songs, those tunes, because so much of the British Isle tunes became bluegrass or American folk music. The
they
melodies,
did?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so I started sitting in with him, that was pretty much when I in the 70s when I started. Right?
Yeah, yeah, I want to try to play something, because you brought in this CD, and I have to say that there's no guarantee that what we actually play the first time around, what we play the first time around, is going to be exactly what we wanted to hear. But there's a lot of material on here, and some of it's from the 70s. But you know, speaking of places to listen to music, you know, I'm curious. I mean, you've been playing down at the press room for a long time, but apparently this first song here is about the Stone Church.
It is.
I want to give that a little bit of a taste. I want to give people a flavor for that, because, you know, when it comes to learning songs and things like that, I mean, the Stone Church is another one of those places that's been around for quite some time.
Let me talk it in a little bit.
Talk it in a little bit.
On Sunday, the three proprietors of the Stone Church had arranged to have roast beef dinner. So if you were a musician, you got your beer and your dinner for free. So the place was packed on Sunday.
Nice.
And The music was terrific. There were a lot of very good artists that performed there. And among them was a band called Sweet Potato Pie, which at first was comprised of Doug Johnson and Lana Petty. And after a while, I joined them, and then when I left them, a fellow named Chip Chase joined them. But Lana and Doug all by themselves could sound like four or five people. And Doug wrote a song about the Stone Church, which gives you a flavor of the time. And, of course, if you are a Stone Churcher, some of the allusions in the lyrics will come to you, and I probably shouldn't explain them.
Maybe not. Maybe if you were in the club, then you
know.
Yeah,
exactly.
And otherwise, you don't. Hey, I think we're just going to go ahead and listen to this song.
Try it
this
out.
Is something about the Stone Church. Hey, you're going to have to let me know pretty quick if it's not the Stone Church. But I think it is.
Probably
so
is.
Here we go, Stone Church.
This is it.
All right, right on. We'll be back in a minute on Local Folk. Tuned in to WSCA, and this program is Local Folk, and I'm here with Bob Frost, who's been all over locally, and we just played a track that he gave me that was all about the Stone Church back in the day, and yeah, that's great.
It was a lot of fun, you know, and Doug and Lana were always entertaining. They had some really fun songs that they did, and their instrumentation was anything from a colander and a spoon to Lana playing two recorders at the same time.
One in each nostril?
Well, more or less, you know, but out of the side of her mouth, you know. Doug was totally shameless on stage.
Shameless?
Very shameless. He would wear a colander on his hat, and he'd be playing the guitar at 1,000 miles an hour doing his ragtime picking, and then he'd hit his head with a spoon or something like that with the colander to put some percussion into it.
To put percussion, okay, so there was a purpose. And
as I say, he was shameless about it.
But this is the stuff that you were listening to, which
all
is
time.
Quite different than maybe what was going on in 72?
I can't speak for everything else that was going on because I concentrated on the music around me.
Well, that's a question. When you picked up the banjo, was that to, you know, torture your parents or?
That was actually a wasted effort would be to try and torture my parents in terms of how they responded to my playing the banjo. They basically just ignored it and were totally tolerant of I practiced 5 or 6 hours a day every day. Oh yeah, I was obsessive about it, which I believe is one of the components of learning how to play any instrument.
I think you're right, but tell me about when you first played the banjo. I mean, what happened? I mean, how did that happen? I mean, you got hooked.
I did get hooked. I had a friend that I grew up with, an unusual man then and now, who one time showed up at my house. We had the kind of relationship where he'd come to my house and open the refrigerator and take what he wanted, and I'd go to his house, and we'd call each other's parents, mom and dad, you know, that kind of thing.
Nice.
And he came over, and he had a banjo. He says, "You got to hear this." "Hear it? I didn't even know you had one," you know, like that. And he starts playing it, and as soon as I heard it being played, it was like an epiphany. I got to play this instrument. And I wound up with the instrument that he had come over with, which was a perfect excuse for him to go out and buy a new Vega five-string banjo.
What do you think the difference was between? I mean, my guess is that you'd heard banjo on a record somewhere or the radio, right?
Yeah, I have no idea. It probably was him, because he was the kind of person in many ways that I chose to emulate. But the surprise of not knowing that he had one probably opened up some mental pores so the music could get in.
Well, did it relegate you to playing folk music? Were you like, you didn't care? I mean, did you want to play rock? I mean...
Well, along with the banjo, I got Pete Seeger's How to Play the Five-String Banjo book. So I guess you would say, in the words of Pete Seeger, all music is played by folks.
Hey, and that's how I feel about this show. I didn't even know that. I mean, you know, yeah. Everyone's a local folk somewhere,
right?
I think
he was quoting somebody else. But yeah, you know, Skip to My Lou, you know, kind of stuff. Basic things to learn how to put a rhythm to some chords and change the chords to accompany a song. So there weren't a lot of instrumentals involved at the time.
Because this is the other question. Did you liked songs as opposed to tunes?
I played the accompaniment to songs as opposed to tunes, but as I progressed, I found that I liked tunes better, especially like the melodic aspect of Irish tunes. That it's a little bit different than accompanying a folk song, because in playing Celtic music, along with other kinds, either you know the tune or you don't, you know. So, and the first instrumentalist on the banjo that I heard was that woke me up to that realization was Bill Keith playing Devil's Dream, which is an extraordinary piece of music at the time. And he did a lot of tunes using what is called fingerstyle playing with picks, and interpreting melodies or playing actual melodies like Morrison's Jig or something like that, note for note, the way you would hear it from a fiddle without perhaps the kind of decorations that fiddlers can put into the music.
So you think he took tunes like from a fiddle tunes and change them to banjo tunes?
I don't know Bill Keith well enough to say what he did, but I can tell you that he too has that obsessive quality. Like when he was learning to play pedal steel, I guess the story has it he locked himself into a hotel room for a few months and learned to play pedal steel.
Hey, I want to play another song on this CD. A song or a tune would be fine by me. It doesn't matter to me, but I noticed when you were explaining to me some of the songs that were on here that some of them were comedic.
Yeah.
Like maybe this one called Lana's First Sale.
Lana's First Sale is also by Sweet Potato Pie, and it's a true story. And Doug Johnson has an ability to make some of the most either frightening or uncomfortable experiences into humorous songs. And this is one of them, Lana's First Sail.
Lana's First Sail. Okay, yeah, let's give this a listen to, and then we'll be back in just a couple minutes here on Local Folk.
Plus the good Captain Wilhelm and the two of us here, put out of Winthrop October the 3rd. We're a half hour out, and we're coming about when the tragic mishap occurred. The old sloop's Angel was under full sail, clipping through swells of 6 feet or more. And we fought with the breeze, but beside us with ease, over at Logan the jets left the shore. To grow. We knew it was the last when the wave hit the mast and the water came gushing to the cabin below. We all scrambled up on that overturned hull, looked out to see if a boat would trouble. In a matter of minutes, three boats circled around. Our lives would be saved, but we lost all the beer. They brought us back safely to the cottage point dock, where we dried off and drank with the sailors. Rescue the boat that was drifting ashore with the incoming tide. All's well that ends well, I guess you could say. The Sun Angel was salvaged as fine as can be. But I'll never forget being all soaking wet, and I'll think twice again before going to sea. Was the good Captain Wilhelm and the two of us four put out of Winthrop October the 3rd.
All right, you're listening to Local Folk here on WSCA, and that song was the first maritime song that we've played on this show today. It's kind of maritime.
It was sub-maritime, actually.
Sub-maritime. Yeah, but it was funny, and this is a band that you were involved with.
I was. I played with them for a couple of years.
And this is what was going on at the Stone Church. You said that first song was at the Stone Church,
yep.
And this band was part of the same band that was going on.
This was one of the bands that showed up at the Stone Church.
That's super cool.
Yep.
So that sounded like 60s or 70s to me. I mean, it sounded very much. I mean, it was. I mean, it says it was made in 1972.
72.
But yep. It's to me, it fit right in with the genre really well, just as well enough to be played on any radio station.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah,
there was nothing weird about that.
Oh no,
you know. So in a way, it was kind of mainstream at the time. Would you say, or
I believe that they were, you know, Doug, or I mean, he did some Jonathan Edwards stuff. That was one of his inspirations. Was Jonathan Edwards, who still sings. He lives over by, well, he lives in Peterborough.
Jonathan Edwards.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, last I knew, he lived in Peterborough.
I don't know, because I don't know Jonathan Edwards that
yeah.
much.
Well,
but there are a lot of people that I do know, and I noticed that you do also have a track on this CD that has a lot of people that I'm familiar with, like Rick Watson,
yeah,
Harvey Reed. You know,
yeah.
It says I don't know this other that Dave, but
Dave Kippeth, and Dave will be moving back to this area sometime before too long, and you will enjoy one of the more superb musicians that you've ever heard.
Really?
A wonderful banjo player, guitar player, a number of different styles, and a good singer, and a killer artist. He's a wonderful artist as well as...
Wonderful artist, like a visual artist?
Yeah, visual arts. Drawings, paintings, very, very accomplished.
So you know and have performed with a lot of the people that are around here making this stuff happen.
One way or another, yeah.
In one way or another. So tell me how you started to get involved with this stuff. Was it with Tom Hall? Tell me how this happened. I mean, obviously you had the banjo.
I can blame Tom.
Blame Tom.
I blame Tom for that. And in the course of the years since, I guess, 1986, that the press room actually became a session on Friday, Stanley Longstaff, the late Stanley Longstaff, another wonderful person, wonderful player, had a Friday gig there, and then he left to do other stuff, and Tom took over. And then within a week or two, I was with him. And over the years, dozens and dozens of people have come through. Some of them have stayed to play. Some of them have gone on to become well-known performers in their own right. I'm thinking of Cozy Sheridan, and I can remember Joyce Anderson coming in when she was either just out of high school or not far from it. And if I remember correctly, she had been Suzuki trained, and since that time, she's gone on to expand her horizons immensely into all different kinds of music. And I can tell you, she's a kick to play with. I'm an old guy, and I need a seatbelt to keep up with her. but we play well, and she is married to Harvey Reed, and Harvey and Dave Kippeth and Rick Watson, and even the Reverend Brimstone, who is otherwise known as Bruce Pingree.
Ah, the Reverend
Brimstone.
Really?
And I can't remember everybody else in the band did kind of a send up of bluegrass songs composed by different combinations of people in the band, probably mostly Harvey and Rick, that were just, first of all, they were funny. And then the instrumentation and the playing were superb. I mean, these guys were just race-worthy bluegrass players. And that's the one you're talking about, Lonesome Dave and the North Dixie Road Kings. I don't believe this was ever released as a project, and I'm just playing a copy that I had lying around.
So is this sort of a world premiere?
No, I'm sure other people have heard it in the area, but it's not official. And Harvey, Rick, if you guys are out there listening, I'll buy you a beer for this.
All right, right on. That sounds great to me.
They get their beers for free.
The last word in Lonesome. Listen for what that last word is right here on Local Folk.
E-R-A to P-I-C-K and S-I-N-G.
I'm ready to P-I-C-K and S-I-N-G.
I can't spell.
Pick and sing.
Pick
and sing.
I'm ready to pick and sing.
Hello, anyone out there who's L-O-N-E-S-O-M-E now. Don't be S-A-D because you're all A-L-O-N-E. You'll find true L-O-V-E somehow. Don't you see our why? Take my N-D-V-I-C-E. There's a special O-N-E for you, I know. One K-I-double-S, one look in or E-Y-E. You won't be L-O-N-E-S-O-M-E anymore. L is for the love we had, for it all turned so bad. O is for the open door you walk through. N is for the nights I cry alone without you in my arms. E's for everything I tried to do to make you stay. S is for the sweet things you used to whisper in my ear. O is for the other guy you're saying them to now. M is for my empty arms. E is for my crying eyes. You are the reason that I spell lonesome with just two short letters now, M-E. L is for the love we had, for it all turned so bad. O is for the open door you walk through. N is for the nights I cry alone without you in my arms. E is for everything I tried to do to make you stay. S is for the sweet things you used to whisper in my ear. O is for the other guy you're saying them to now. M is for my empty arms. E is for my crying eyes. You are the reason that I spell lonesome with just two short letters now. M-E. And you are the reason that I spell lonesome with just two short letters now. M-E.
You are listening to 106.1 FM, WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. You're listening to Local Folk, and we just listened to an absolutely hilariously great song, The Last Word of Lonesome. And it was Lonesome Dave and the North Dixie Road Kings. That was with Rick Watson, Harvey Reed, Dave Kippeth.
Yep.
At all yourself?
No, I was I was a dedicated listener.
A dedicated listener at that particular point, which, by the way, is an extremely important part of music and musicians, is people that are listening.
Musicians play for listeners.
They play for listeners, so you got to go out there and be a listener. You know, some people turn around and after they become listeners for a long time, decide that they're going to become players and. But, you know, I'll tell you what, just the love of the music and just listening is one of the greatest things. I have to let you all know that programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by the Seacoast Growers Association, presenting farmers markets in the Seacoast region for 32 years with local produce, meats, prepared foods, garden plants, and handcrafted goods. Seacoast Growers. .org. And I also want to let you know that it's time for a musical calendar, so I will let you know a little bit about a musical event. Looks like Suzanne Vega is going to be here August 8th. That's just in a couple of days, I think. Right?
Well, you're asking the wrong person.
It's two days.
I can't remember what I did yesterday.
What's wrong with me? Where I have to be, right? It's just in a few days. I think today's the 6th. I've looked at that date a lot, but I work down at the Prescott Park, but I have nothing to do with the Arts Festival. But I think this Wednesday is going to be Suzanne Vega, who I remember growing up doing all kinds of crazy, you know, popular songs and this and that. So, hey, you know, go down and listen to Suzanne Vega. It's gonna be very folky, I think, and rock your socks off. Anyways, that's my musical calendar. Press room on Friday nights if you want to hear some of this folk music. Not these exact things, but, you know, we do kind of a mixture of all sorts of things. I've been DJing down at the Ashworth on Friday, so I haven't been able to be there. But, I mean, it's... tell me, have things changed that significantly between when the press room session started? You said in what, 87, 86?
86 or 8, yeah, I think it was 86. Well, you know the aphorism, you never step into the same river twice?
Yes.
Well, at the press room, you never step into the same river once. You never know what's going to happen. It depends on who shows up, how they're feeling, what instruments did they bring, how much noise they... is ambient in the room and how much volume we have to add to it in order to either hear each other or allow ourselves to be heard. And especially if there's singers in Europe, Ireland in particular, when a singer starts, if somebody's talking above ambient level, they get hushed.
I see.
They get hushed. But that doesn't happen too much in the States that I've seen, although we've started practicing that, like, shut up! You know, not quite that bad. But,
I've heard people getting the stare down.
Well, the stare down, you know, well, the fact that it's a bar makes a difference. It's not there for our pleasure. It's right. There for the pleasure of the tenants and the patrons that go there.
But you provide. I mean, you get pleasure. You provide pleasure or music.
Well, I certainly hope so. And every week there are people who come every week, you know, and usually you can predict where they're going to sit within probably 3 or 4 feet at the press room. And there are people that enjoy the session and In the summertime, it's a little more difficult because people will come in earlier than the session begins, and they might be occupying what we would call listening tables.
Listening tables.
And not listening.
Ooh, yes, of course.
But well, there's a number of techniques that we've used to do that. One of them is just to go over and sit with them. You know, hey, where are you folks from? You know, that, did you come here for the music, or are you just walking in, you know?
And then right before they respond, you go, oh, hold on, shh, yeah. We have to be quiet for the musicians.
Something along those lines, you know. It's a subversive anti-tourist behavior.
Yeah, well, you must be good at it, though, because you've been doing it for a long time.
Practice.
Practice makes perfect.
Well, I don't know about the perfect part.
Well, practice, there was a perfect practice makes perfect. I read that somewhere, but do you think folk music is on the fringe?
No. I think that people are afraid to admit it, that they like it, and because so much of the hype that you hear on you know, radio stations and popular music. I mean, if you don't have a video to go along with it, it must not be music. And not many people have heard music live, you know, relatively speaking. And Harvey Reed, who, in my opinion, has done more than almost anyone else in this area to keep music alive and live performances going, has a quip that he made, which is, the field of unpopular music is wide open.
It's wide open. I like it. It's one of his quotes. Nice.
But there's something that happens when you're in the presence of people who enjoy what they're doing, and they're playing not because they're getting paid millions of dollars to throw on a 800-megawatt concert, yeah, but because they're playing music that they like, that they know well, that they've been performing probably for years one way or another. And the enthusiasm and often the emotion of the songs and tunes is contagious. You can hear it, and you can feel the history in it, or you can feel the enjoyment, or the sadness, or the injustice that the words carry in the tune. And there are just a whole lot of really good musicians in this area who do just that. You know, and I feel privileged to not only know them, but on occasions to have played with them.
But is that what keeps you down there at the press room? That keeps you going. What is it that brings you down there?
I try to maintain an even level of insanity, I guess. You know, and that kind of helps me out. And I had a lot of 3-piece suit jobs. Some of them were high pressure.
High pressure.
Yep.
Oh, my.
Yep. You know, like Lee Trevino responding to a question about playing the Masters under pressure. And says, how do you feel now that you've won it? Was the pressure hard? And Trevino's answer was, let me tell you, pressure is playing for $10 when you only get 5 in your pocket. So it's relative.
All things are relative.
Yeah.
But you know, you said you have these high pressure jobs or whatever. But I mean, is that contrary to what happens down at the press room? Is that the release?
Well, it is a release, and it's also an orientation, because there have been people under pressure ever since there's been people, and somehow you get through life one way or another, and whatever, what do they say? Whatever floats your boat.
Whatever floats your boat.
You know, you do what you have to do to remain effective and competent in your sphere of activity.
A lot of people are terrified to perform, so you know.
Oh, I was.
Were you?
Yep. And Lana Petty of the Sweet Potato Pie Group, she straightened me out on that. She said, you know, like I would make a mistake on stage and I'd be so embarrassed about it, thinking about it, that I'd make another one.
Right.
And I apologized to her. And she said, this was in a moment of private conversation, and she said, well, just keep in mind, there isn't a performing musician in the world that hasn't gone through the same thing. And for the most part, if you play, you know what that's like. And if you don't play, you might not even hear the mistake.
That's very likely.
And not only that, if you did hear it, you wouldn't remember it. Although I do recall watching Lonesome Dave in the North Dixie Road Kings, where Rick Watson was playing the mandolin at, just under warp speed, tucked into the little space available made by the grand piano curve. You know, he's on stage, and people were, the press room was full, and there was a table of four people right next to him, and a woman who had turned her back to the table to be facing Rick, and her nose might have been 3 feet from Rick's mandolin, and he's playing along, and unusually for him, he made a clam. You know, he would say a bad choice.
A bad choice, yes.
And
clams were a bad choice.
And in slow motion, the clam and this woman starts laughing. You know, and before Rick came down with the next stroke of the of his pick, he stuck the mandolin under this woman's nose and hit the same note again. it totally cracked me up. And so you can make of mistakes what you want, but everybody makes them.
The truth.
It's what you do afterwards that counts, I guess.
It's what you do after, how you react to it.
Well, Jimi Hendrix, a piece of music played wrong twice in a row is the beginnings of an arrangement.
There you go.
Something along those lines.
So as a banjo player, though, I mean, usually I don't hear, you know, bluegrass down at the press room, but you're a banjo player, and do you feel that bluegrass is, you know, your thing? Or do you play everything.
I did play bluegrass for a long time. I guess you could consider me right now, anyway, a recovering bluegrass player.
A recovering, that's good. Yeah, I like that.
I was with I was the first banjo player in White Mountain Bluegrass with Mac and Hazel McGee and Sammy Garish and Joe Parmelo and Jeff Lind, and we played bluegrass all the time. We went all over the place, and I liked the music, but I prefer to play sitting down, and the music that I like is more of the Irish flavor, so I gradually moved into the Celtic type of music.
Well, I want to do we have time for maybe two songs.
Sure.
You know, one that we're going to leave with, and one that we can play right now. And I'm trying to figure out if I want to play Mabel Kelly right now or the Boomer right now.
I'm saying I would think that the Boomer would be a good one because I identify with it. And this is a composition by a friend of mine, Bennett Hammond, and it's played on a fretless 5-string banjo. Finger style without picks, which is about everything that you can do to make it difficult to play a banjo, Bennett has done. Bennett is a wonderful guitar player. He recorded this in his home using GarageBand software, some really good microphones, and he accompanies himself on the guitar, and he's a monster guitar player.
Did you tell me something about him in Cuba, or was it?
When I first met Bennett was at the Stone Church, and I had walked in with my banjo in to put the case in the back room behind the stage, and there's this guy in there playing the guitar, and he's tall fellow, past his shoulder length, blonde hair, bib overalls, sandals, no shirt. And he sees the banjo. He goes, "Banjo, we've got to play some bluegrass." Okay. So we sat down to see what we could play, and I started off with Foggy Mountain Breakdown because that's obligatory for a banjo player at the time anyway. And Bennett's, he's thumping right along, playing fingerstyle, nice backup rhythm. And when it comes time when the banjo stops its lead and normally the fiddle would take over, Bennett starts playing the melody note for note on the guitar and backing himself up at the same time. And I'm thunderstruck. And after we were through, I said, "Bennett, how did you ever learn how to play like that?" And he said, "Well," he said, "when I was growing up, I really liked bluegrass, but our family lived in Puerto Rico, and the only station that we could get with any degree of clarity at all was WWVA in Wheeling, West Virginia. And it wasn't until we moved back to the States that I found out that Flat and Scruggs were two different people.
That's amazing. Hey, it's like a fable almost. It's
well,
like Bob Frost's fable.
It may
fable.
Be a fable, but it, if you ever have spent any time around Bennett and his guitar work, you probably believe it.
No, I believe it. It's just it's only a fable yeah. because it has a moral. I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading a moral into it. But anyways, there's a or a message or an underlying
the
message.
The boomer. It's about me, it has from the it. Point of view of an aging person such as myself, so I identify with this song.
Rock and roll. The boomer, Bennett Hammond, here on Local Folk.
Banjo.
Gray, my eyes are tired and sad. Now it seems my brighter days have already had. Never yet grown up, already I'm grown old. I feel that icy wind blowing, Lord, it's getting cold. I kept my hair and lost my teeth. My face is like a ruin. I'm debonair, but underneath I don't know what I'm doing. Young folks lose their patience, everyone's a scold. I feel an icy wind blowing, Lord, it's getting cold.
Excuse me, sorry. Cut that off just a little bit short, but the icy wind blowing. Hey, I appreciate you coming on here and sharing these songs of these different people that you've known and loved, you know, throughout this area and throughout your career. This has spanned a lot, you know, all over here, you know, all over, you know, from the press room to the Stone Church and every place in between, all these cool people that you've played with. You've shared their music with. We have to go in just a couple minutes. Is there anything else?
Well, I would like to speak in praise of a fellow who was very influential in the music that I play, and who died a few years ago. He was the guitarist for the Angel Band. His name is David Bem, and a larger-than-life person. He had the ability to make you believe anything he said, and there was no doubt in your mind that at one time he was a sergeant in the Marine Corps. You will believe. And but he was a lot of fun to play with, and he had a very broad musical background. He must have known thousands and thousands and thousands of songs, and he had a voice that could be heard above heavy traffic.
He sure did.
And Emery Hutchins, one of the other bandmates and a former guest on this show, also a retired science teacher, brought in a decibel meter and pegged it at 108.
Oh, is that right?
Jet engine time. But we could do a whole show on David Bem. There's lots of people around here that have David Bem
stories.
I'd love
to do it. I may do that sometime. You know, it's always good. It's always good to remember the people that are not, you know, physically with us anymore.
He has an album that we did, a legacy album called Hellfire and Bem Nation.
I love it. I love the name. I love the whole thing. Hellfire and Bem Nation. Hey, that is super cool. And actually, I think that we may have heard a track, at least one track in my career here on Local Folk. And I believe that it was Bruce McIntyre that played that.
Have been.
But, you know, I would love to have a whole show about him. I'm going to leave us, though, with a song called Mabel Kelly. It was the song that I was going to try to play originally at the beginning. But and I just want to say that you described it as one of the most beautiful songs that you knew.
Well, it's actually a tune, and it's also an O'Carolan, a blind harper from Ireland 300 years ago, still considered Ireland's national composer, but played by Bob and Mary Paul on hammered dulcimer and Celtic harp. I think is probably one of the most beautiful pieces of music I've ever heard.
All right, well, we're going to leave you with that here on Local Folk. Until next week, my guest is Eamon Coyne. And that's going to be a great time. He's a fantastic fiddler, and I can't wait to chat with him. But until then, this is Steve Carrigan here on Local Folk, wishing you all the best.